So I get to Yoast on Sunday evening, getting off my couch, and I was watching Red Zone, and I went to go cover the hockey game, excited because of what happened Saturday. And I walk in, and I remember that I have three TVs, and I look over, and there's a remote, and all the TVs are off. And so I start thinking, oh my gosh, I wonder if, like, Yoast has Red Zone. So I turn one of the TVs on, and I keep flipping and flipping and flipping and flipping and flipping, and I find it, and it's Red Zone. Like, there's no way they get it. And then Scott Hansen appears, and I was like, no way. And then I started thinking, I still have two other TVs. I could go put something else on. So I put the Bills Cardinals on, and then I put on, I did not put BTN on because for whatever reason, the Michigan Wisconsin game was playing on BTN at that exact moment.
It was on every other TV.
Yeah. And so I put the in arena channel on, which is like a picture of whatever's going on in the scoreboard. And then I just sat down and ate a sandwich and watched Red Zone in my own suite, because they have us in suites now. This isn't like we have like four chairs on a table with holes in it that looks like it's going to fall over. These are like a suite, and the guy that I was supposed to be there with didn't even show up. So I literally had my own suite, three televisions, a refrigerator with some water in it, and I'm just standing there watching the hockey game. I know that it's bad that fans aren't there, but I kind of don't want them to come back now. How was your experience, Alex?
It was pretty solid. We were in separate booths. I was there on a WCBN sports credential. You were there on an MGO credential. So we had separate boxes of our own. My box on Sunday, this was not a problem on Saturday, but on Sunday, all of the chairs in Yoast Ice Arena were in our box. There's two entrances to the box, and the first entrance is blockaded by like 40 chairs.
There might have actually been 40 chairs. I walked over, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go say hi to Alex. I walk in, and I take a step in, and you see me out of the corner of your eye. You look at me. We make eye contact, and I can't get to you because there's literally so many chairs in the way.
Like the Daily kids had to like jump over the chairs to get to their little area because they were on there was a two-level box, and they were on the lower level of the box. But that was unusual, and it also didn't help that, yes, every other TV had the Michigan-Wisconsin replay on. And so that was going on constantly. But I also thought it was kind of chilly on Sunday. I didn't think it was chilly on Saturday, but it was kind of cold in Yoast on Sunday.
Were you there a couple years ago when they played Merrimack on like a Tuesday?
Yeah, the freezing game.
And it was
game.
About 20 degrees? Yeah. I was typing in gloves that game. It wasn't that cold this time.
No, it wasn't that bad. It was just a little chilly. Otherwise, I mean, I thought it was a pretty nice setup. A little disappointed they didn't feed us on Sunday night because we've been fed at the Big House 2 weeks in a row. But nothing at Yoast this week, so.
Yeah. Saturday, we did not get any food, and Sunday, I was like, I'm bringing a sandwich.
Well, Saturday, at least, you know, that was a weird time. It was a mid-afternoon game, but I was kind of hoping they would serve us dinner on Sunday night, but they didn't. Neither did the parents, but it was good to see parents in the building, because I guess they may not be allowed to come back for a few weeks now with new restrictions, but
yeah,
at least they got to see some pretty fun games.
Oh my gosh. So I don't even know where to begin with this. I mean, I guess we just did the preview, and basically all of the high-end parts of our preview are slowly coming to fruition. But, okay, I'm going to start with, what was your favorite goal of the weekend? You have 11 to choose from.
Oh, I think that, no question, it's the Johnson to Blankenberg to power goal in the late stages of Saturday. That backhand pass, no look, by Johnson to Blankenberg, who makes the extra pass to Power, who just easily picks the top corner. I mean,
and that happened right in front of us.
Yep, right in front of us.
Yeah. No, that was what I was going to say, and I figured you might say that. So I want to go with the Power diagonal to York, who finishes, because I'm trying to remember the last time I saw two Michigan defensemen play at that level and create a goal more or less on their own doing that. So we also need to say who we are, because I was talking to a family member of mine and they did not recognize my voice. And so my name is David Nasternak, and I work for MGO Blog doing hockey stuff and other stuff. And yeah, you probably know kind of who I am, but I'm sort of the guy behind the scenes. And if there's a guy behind the scenes who is trying to peek out from behind the curtain more, it is.
I'm Alex Drain. I've worked at MGO Blog for a few years. Also work at WCBN Sports, the student radio station on campus. So I've done some things around. I got a fan that shouted me out on Twitter yesterday who had followed my softball coverage in the past.
All right.
For CBN. So that was pretty neat.
That's great.
And it was a big weekend for me, too. I got a retweet from Brian as well. So that always boosts the follower count on Twitter by 10
I know.
15.
You already start seeing, like, so-and-so has followed you, so-and-so has followed you, so-and-so has followed you. And I'm like, what? How do you even, where does this go? Oh, and then you see Brian retweets your tweet. Yeah, no, that's happened a couple times. And I go to bed smiling a little more on those nights.
Yeah, you can follow me at Alex_Drain on Twitter.
Ooh, maybe this will get you some more retweets. We'll see how many people actually listen to this.
It was pretty good last week. So
yeah,
thank you all for joining us as we...
So we
are a podcast with glee in an otherwise gloomy Michigan weekend.
So... we've talked about our two favorite goals. There are still like 9 more. So on Saturday, Michigan wins. We'll cover the first game in the first segment. Michigan wins 8-1. And it's not like we haven't seen Michigan put up 8 goals before ever.
I mean, it's been a little while. And they didn't score 8 last year, right?
Well, yeah. That's kind of what I was going to say. It's going to be a while. And the way that they did it was more like not blindly throwing pucks at the net and everything's going in, but just... never really losing control of the puck for a weekend?
Yeah, you know, there are always ways that if you're an intelligent sports fan, you can tell when something's an imposter and when something isn't.
Right.
You can tell when a team blows another team out if sort of what the conditions were. And what Michigan did, I mean, I don't think Arizona State played that poorly, and we'll get into that later about is Arizona State actually bad, but I mean, Michigan was just dominant, and it was a level of precision that you do not see at the college level very often. And not just the talent level, but, you know, credit Mel. I mean, they got all these extra months to practice, and they were practicing. I mean, there was no sloppiness.
No.
I mean, just tape-to-tape passes, and they just picked apart Arizona State and held the puck the entire game. I mean, there's maybe 90 seconds of time Arizona State would dominate in each period, in total of each period, and then the other 18 and a half minutes were all Michigan. It just was a relentless swarm. Every player on the ice was joining in, and, you know, you end the night on Sunday with Arizona State's coach saying this is the best NCAA team he's ever seen. So
yeah, and that's, I mean, that is, well, that's something in and of itself, but it really leads to the fact that this wasn't the CCM line. This was one line. Like, the first line that comes on the ice was Brisson, Beecher, and Lambert of the on Saturday, and they have a pretty good shift. And you're like, okay, sweet, here we go. And then the next line comes out, and it's, I think Al Randall called them the mover line, which was Moyle, Raby, Van Wy.
That's a bad name.
Yeah.
Get a better name, Al.
Okay. So they come out on the ice, and they do the same thing. And then the line that we were giggling about before the game started was Kent Johnson with Matty Beniers, and they do the same thing. And you're like, wait a minute, we've almost gone through Michigan's entire forward roster here, and we've gotten the same results.
I mean, it's, you know, Arizona State's, it's like they got tied down, you know, on the beach, and each wave is just washing over them over and over and over. I mean, it's just relentless. There was no break. Just nonstop, every single line just comes on and plays. And that's when we talk about game two in particular, where Beecher goes out. I mean, I didn't even notice he was out for a while because the lines were indistinguishable to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even comment really on line pairings because it was, in the past, you'd be like, okay, we watch, here's the Josh Norris line. Now, oh, look, this
right.
line has got some guys that don't have high talent. You notice that. Every line was indistinguishable. They were all just pedal to the metal the entire time.
And it seemed like you were always waiting for a certain line to come back out. That's not the case anymore. Now
yeah.
it's just like, oh, here comes Thomas Bortolo. Ooh, here comes Kent Johnson. Ooh, Johnny Beecher's back on the ice. And you're
yeah.
just like, oh, Johnny Beecher's on the ice again. And I was, wait a minute, he left the ice? And it was just, I don't remember an experience like that from just a sheer, like, you can look at statistics and create mismatches with them and have like one team outplays the other one. But this wasn't just from in the numbers. This was on the ice and the way that everyone was playing. I mean, everything was like you said. It was very smooth. You can tell that they've been practicing. People back-checked. Like, so we go through this thing and there's like some, you know, talk that maybe Bortolo or Beniers isn't the best defensive player or he's kind of an offensive guy. Well, Beniers was on PK too. So they had, you know, two of the mover line. I don't know. We need a better name. But, like, two of those guys who've kind of been on PK1 forever. And then Beniers comes out of PK2. And I was like, did he mean to go out there or what? And he looked fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought Beniers was the best defensively of the freshman forwards. I mean, I thought Beecher looked pretty good defensively as well. And
yeah.
I mean, again, that was kind of the concern coming into this is, okay, you know, some of these scouting reports sort of read, and having watched Wisconsin last year, you kind of expected these guys to sort of do the thing Wayne Gretzky used to do, where you just hang out at the blue line in your own zone and wait for the breakout the other way. But, like, they were competing. I mean, obviously, ASU was rarely in Michigan's zone, so they didn't get the most time to really experiment with it. But, I mean, I thought overall that they did fine defensively, and Michigan didn't really have any issues in their own end and got it out quickly, and then otherwise, you know, the best defense is not letting the opponent touch the puck.
Yeah.
And that was the story of the weekend.
So we can go through the goals real quick because there were eight of them. But Beniers had a redirect on, I think it was a Becker centering pass to take the lead.
Yeah.
And then Bordalo, I don't think he was credited. I think they're crediting
Beecher. I thought they corrected that.
Did they?
I don't know. We'd have to check the stats.
I thought it was a Bordalo own goal. You saw the same thing.
We were right in front of it, and it sure looked like it went off an ASU skate.
Yeah, it's basically he's trying to hit Beecher, but it hits an ASU skate and goes behind.
Yeah.
I think it was DeBrower at the time.
DeBrower, yep.
And then the third goal was was Nolan Moyle doing the spike donut where he just kind of circles around and then comes around again and scores on a shot. Granowitz.
I think one also went in off an ASU body.
Did it? But that was shot from close in.
Yeah, that was the angle that we had trouble seeing from our vantage point on the ice. But
yeah, that was the one thing. You said you had a good weekend of in your suite, as we'll call them. I was a little disappointed that they put you that far down as a radio booth, but
so the interesting thing about that is that we normally radio, we get set next to Al Randall, and we're normally on the other side of the ice. So for my first 3 years, we always get the side where Michigan defends twice a game.
Right.
And then this time we were at the side Michigan was attacking twice a game, which when they're scoring 11 goals in two games is fine by me.
That's probably true. I'll give you that. So goal four was a Granowitz sort of special where he scores from very close in after Cam York basically pulls a Quinn Hughes and does the whole thing as pretty much what every talented player on this Michigan roster did at some point or another during the weekend, which was skate pretty much in a full circle and then hit a guy who was being ignored pretty close to the slot and just taps in. So it's 4-0 at this point. And then my choice for goal was, again, this was in the second period, and Power has the puck basically straight away and looks to shoot, but glances out the side of his eyes and hits a diagonal to Cam York, who's sliding down the boards, and he one-times it. I think that was 5-hole. And I was like, I mean, at that point, I think I just stopped. I started laughing because I was like, I'm not sure what's left for this team to do. They have 5 goals in half a game, and now the defensemen are finding each other. And it was just, I don't know, I felt very surreal. So the Blankenberg snipe on the power play.
We saw that last year.
Right. He had a couple last year in a similar situation from the top of the house, and he got the puck out there. That's the other thing, and we'll get into this more later, but the power play was just, it doesn't even matter if they score. I mean, it matters. But the puck movement is just, I mean, it's like watching an NHL team.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my tweet that Brian had retweeted was that, I mean, it just didn't look like one of those two teams was an NCAA team. And, you know, the way I phrased it was, I don't think that's an indictment of ASU. I mean, I thought ASU looked like a college team, and I thought Michigan looked like, you know, an AHL team or an ECAA, you know, a team with professionals. And
yeah. So Blankenberg hits that snipe from pretty wide open straight away. And then Beniers had the 7th goal. I wrote down on an in-front tap-in in right near the crease. I think that was a little bit more of a garbage goal.
That's probably the one scored. I remember the least.
Yeah, I was just trying to picture it in my head, and I couldn't. And then the 8th goal was the one that you talked about, which was the great all-around passing. I think I called it like a tic-tac-toe, tic-tac-toe, because the puck throughout that entire power play was just binging around everywhere. And then,
I mean, Johnson's got his face to the boards, and he makes a no-look behind-the-back pass to Blankenberg. And Blankenberg's at a position where, with his wrist shot, he can probably score from there.
Right.
But he makes the extra pass to get Brady down, and then Powers got the entire, you know, net exposed. All he's got to do is hit the cage, and then boom.
And I believe, if I remember correctly, I believe Power moved down for that. Like, he wasn't sitting there on the wing waiting. I think he kind of saw that and slid. And this kid's 17. And, I mean, granted, he's, what, probably going to be the first overall pick in the draft next year?
We'll just say top five.
Top five, okay. But for him to be able to step in like that and just see that space and give Blankenberg the pass, and then he just finishes as calmly was like, I mean, at that point, it was 8-0, and, I mean, they were kind of hoping to get a shutout, but you're basically like, I mean, I don't know what else to really do for the rest of this game.
I mean, that was just a goal where you're just like, you see Johnson's pass, you're like, oh, and then you see Blankenberg with your puck, and you're like, oh, and then it gets to Power, and then at that point, you're just like, well, there it is, and then and then it's in. So, I mean, it's, and then ASU did tally at the end, a sad goal, I guess, breaks the shutout.
Are you stealing my things now? a sad power play goal,
yes. Ryan O'Reilly, a Red Wings prospect, scores and just kind of mucking it up in the crease. He was one of their higher touted recruits. And that was their lone goal of the weekend. It was like with, what, 3 minutes to go in that game.
Yeah.
And that broke an extra long Straussman shutout streak.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, and somebody tweeted me about that.
Because he shut out MSU in both of the tournament games before the season was canceled.
Right.
So he went almost three full games without allowing a goal. And then he had a shutout on Sunday. So he's allowed one goal in four regulation games combined.
He's going to be like the most hyped up player for a returning team that is the most overlooked for a season. Because, I mean, he'll probably have some games that he has to win because hockey's like that. But, like, you expect Michigan to be scoring goals this year.
He's Chris Osgood, right? Like, you're a goalie that plays on a dominant possession team, and you can take a nap for a lot of the game, and you get called upon to make a couple saves here or there, and then you end the game with, you know, 16 shots faced. That's a pretty fun
so
life as a goalie.
Our resident goalie, Anthony, would always talk to me about that, and he'd say, you know, sometimes it's better to see more shots because it just keeps you awake. And, you know, I played some indoor soccer, and I can attest to that because there are times when we'd have the ball the whole time, and you're just basically standing at the halfway line being like, hey, does anybody need an outlet? Outlet? No? Okay, you're good. Oh, and then you kind of twirl around a couple times, and maybe you see five shots, but it's hard to stay locked in. Although, I mean, Adam did a great profile on Mann last year, and learning more about the guy, it's hard for me to envision him not basically be going through everything as everyone else is. So I don't have really too many worries about him falling asleep. We will mention that, so Michigan had the puck so often that every once in a while somebody goes the wrong place or you just get a bad pass or a deflection, and the Ice Devils got a 2-0, 3-0.
Yeah, I never saw a replay of that because no one wanted to put out a replay. Michigan had enough replays that they didn't feel like tweeting that out, and ASU wasn't going to tweet it out. So we never got to see a replay of it. But it must have been a busted line change of some kind where two guys are behind the play way up the ice, and they get Johnny Walker, and he's in the clear, and then Mann comes up big. And I, not here to brag, but we talked about last week about will Michigan open it up? And I said, yeah, and they did. And, you know, a consequence of that is that you are going to cede a few A-plus chances, which we get to the second game. They didn't as much on Sunday, but certainly on Saturday, I think ASU had about five or six really nice chances. But with Mann back there, you feel pretty good about his ability to stop a lot of them. I mean, it's kind of like the way Michigan is playing. I mean, I'll make more comparisons later because it's not quite as odd man rush based as the way the 80s Oilers played, but their philosophy was the same, which is we'll get some great chances, you'll get some great chances, but we'll have more of those and we'll have better playmakers and better scorers, and we also have a great goalie, and so we'll outscore you. And I mean, that's kind of the way Michigan played. They're going to have better finishers than their opponent, and they're going to have a better goalie than their opponent. And so if you're trading great chances, you feel pretty darn good about your ability to convert more of those chances than your opponent. And also, based on this weekend, Michigan's going to get like 25 of those, and the opponent will get five. So it's not even, you know, close in the amount that they'll get either. So, but that's kind of their new philosophy. I mean, this was not in any way like what we saw last year. I mean, last year, Cam York was a very stationary guy playing at the blue line, cautious. And, you know, now he's Quinn Hughes. I mean, yeah. You know, he's all over the zone. I mean, he's not the transcendent skater of Hughes still, but his movement around the zone and his aggressiveness and jumping up and creating stuff, I mean, it's very clear that, you know, Mel took the leash off, and now he's allowed to kind of do whatever he wants, and that's how Michigan's going to play now.
Yeah, and he, you know, then my next note on our thing here was that I want to talk about the defense, and that's a perfect transition because he wasn't the only defenseman that did that. Like, Keaton Pearson led a couple rushes. Speaking of Keaton Pearson, I think it's Pearson.
I always pronounced it Pearson, but Pearson. I don't know. It's an H, so it's kind of like a
Yeah, it's P-E-H.
Pearson.
So he was okay last year. So he was a true freshman last year and was, you know, it wasn't anything super notable about him, but he wasn't giving the puck away all the time either. But this year he looks like he fits into what is now a Michigan defenseman of being an activated mover of the puck.
And he's not going to be as aggressive as York because he's playing in a pair with York.
Right.
And so he sat back a bit, but I mean, I thought he was really good defensively.
Yes.
Not just, if you get that defensive performance from him every game, you're going to be happy.
And that's kind of what you need from a guy who is going to be paired with an offensive defenseman, is a guy who can, because there's a couple times when he was left one-on-one with someone and just, you know, very easily, calmly took the puck off him, went to the corner, everybody came back, the defense set up, and there was no chance. And that, I think, is only going to reinforce like what we were talking about with guys like York and Power going forward, I think, and Blankenberg even too. I mean, there's just like you start listing guys and then you end up at five. Like, oh, well, which defenseman do you want to go forward? Well, kind of all of them almost. And it's and especially the other thing that ties into that is you have forwards that back check.
Yep.
And you have forwards that fill. So, like, when you were talking about, when we were eating before this, you were talking about how it's almost transitioned into positionless hockey?
In some ways, because, I mean, we already have explained to the audience where we were seated. I mean, how many times during the game did you look down at the zone we were right in front of, which was Michigan's attacking zone 2/3 of the time, and you see Owen Power down in the corner, like
right.
The corner closest to us, and you're like, what's he doing down there? Like, you know, that's he should be back at the blue line. And, I mean, he wound up there a lot. Blankenberg wound up there a lot.
Yep.
Cam York wound up there a lot. And in general, you know, the two things that stand out about the weekend in general, and as we move into the second game too, is movement and passing. And, you know, movement, people are going to talk about the speed, and certainly that was a storyline that popped up. But Michigan just moved around the ice so well, and no guys were ever standing around. There was nobody stationary, which ASU was victim of a little bit, and just how often guys were able to see open ice and get to the open ice and use it. I mean, that's the York goal you talk about. York is standing there. He sees open ice that ASU is giving him, and boom, he's there, gets mm-hmm. the pass, and he scores. And that's what Michigan was doing all weekend long. Everybody's moving, everybody's rotating, and, I mean, how many times was Bortolo at the point, right? And then the defenseman's down by the crease. I mean, they were just moving around just incredibly, and it just was very, very beautiful to watch.
That it was. We can talk a little special teams in this game. Michigan goes 3-for-4, and the only thing that stopped them was Cam York having to move a stick that was in his way, so he took his stick and just moved it to the side, which is a penalty, which I would say, hey, ref, why don't you come pick up the stick if it's in the way? But he didn't, and that was the only power play they didn't score on. We touched on how they scored their goals, but, a couple of those goals were really nice. It just, I don't ever remember seeing Michigan move the puck like that. Like, even the CCM power play, when they had Werenski and then Alex Kyle in the middle, was good, but it wasn't like tic-tac-toe times three like that. The way the puck is just zinging around. Oh, there's no shot. We're going back. Okay, now we're rotating. All right, now we're zinging it around again. And now in the middle, okay, there's no shot back out. And I could just watch that on loop, it seems like.
I mean, this weekend was hockey porn. I mean, it was. It just, like, it's just the things that you just dream about seeing. I mean, it just, again, the precision of the passing as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, no sloppy passes, just tape to tape, guys hitting the open guy and the movement. even when they weren't scoring on Sunday. I mean, the movement was terrific on the power play all weekend long, getting open shots, getting open chances. And, you know, ASU was very feeble at clearing. I mean, you know, well, Michigan was holding the puck in all the time on the power play, just chance after chance after chance after chance. And they're just on top of you the whole time.
And then on the penalty kill, they got 3 breakaways.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to happen every time. But they, Beecher had one, Bortolo had one. I don't remember who had the last one, but it was just a forward pressuring a defenseman at the point, gets his stick on a puck, knocks it in the neutral zone, wins a race, and all of a sudden you're in alone. And they scored on none of them.
Yep.
So they could have had 12 goals.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's not an uncommon thing. You put fast guys on the penalty kill because it puts pressure on the defenseman. And if, you know, there's a pass out to the point and, oh, it hops over his stick, now you're in trouble, right? And now the team with the power play is in a lot of of worry and a lot of panic because Michigan's guys are just going to be faster. And that's, you know, that's the other piece to the movement category is that, you know, not just was Michigan finding open space, but then, you know, in contested races, they were winning the battles. They were getting there faster. And, you know, Waterloo gets on his horse and he's just gone, you know, and
yep.
It's just a generally a bad sign when your power play is getting as many chances as the opponent is while you're on the power play. Like, and that was ASU's story on Saturday.
If there was one nit to pick, I would say it was that Michigan was on the penalty kill too often.
Especially in the third period.
They took 7 penalties,
yeah,
I believe.
I think the 5 of them were in the latter 2 periods and 4 were in the third.
Which probably is like, I don't want to say it was screwing around, but I'm going to guess that the focus was waning a little bit at that point when you're up by 6 goals.
I mean, that's the point
goals.
In the basketball game, you know, when they're bouncing the ball off the backboard to set up an alley-oop.
Yeah. Like, So, you know, there was one thing to build on for game 2. We'll tell you how that turned out. You can probably guess in a minute or two. I wrote down the guys that impressed me from game 1 were Bortolo, Power, Lambert, Beniers. With Johnson, I thought that was interesting. York, Beecher, and then I wrote down, I feel like everyone.
I mean, what was wild about that game is that, like, I didn't think that Kent Johnson, I mean, outside of his one great assist, stood out that much on Saturday, and he ended up with 4 assists.
He did end up with 4 assists.
And I was like, I don't really remember seeing him that much. And then it's like, oh, he had 4 assists. Okay. And, like, Bortolo, I thought, was everywhere in that game.
Yes.
Just all over the ice, racing up and down. I mean, he's probably the fastest of the group. It was just total dominance.
Total domination. And the last great note to say before we take a break, the game lasted just over 2 hours.
Both were fast games, but Saturday's was faster because there wasn't network TV.
That's true. I mean, I think I was out. The puck dropped at 3, and I want to say I was walking out by 5:15.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I'll take more of those.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Leave it on the grass! Leave it on the grass, man! Leave it on the grass! Leave it on the grass!
So after Saturday night's game, before we get into Sunday night's game, you had an interesting experience on Twitter.
So I absolutely love Mel Pearson's tweets. And in a lot of the same way I loved Beilein's tweets. And they're very, very similar. But Mel sends out this tweet on Saturday night at 8:54. So I was reading it while I was on air during the Wisconsin football game. So it gave me a little bit of something to smile at.
Reprise.
Then the whole game, I'm just staring out, you know, the press box window onto the field and just seeing the Owen Power goal. Just like, that's what I'm really looking at.
Surprised you didn't, like, watch the replay on your computer.
But anyway, so Mel sends out this tweet, and the tweet reads, "I would like to thank everyone who has made it possible for our team to play the game we all love and enjoy. From the parking attendants to the ushers to the game day operations staff to the crew at Yost, the Big Ten and Ward Manual and our athletic administration at Go Blue." It's a very nice tweet.
Yeah.
But he leaves punctuate. He leaves a space before every punctuation. So it's like the game we all love and enjoy. Space, period, space, from the parking attendants, space, comma, space. And so you're already just like, okay, what's going on there?
How many characters is he allowed? I feel like that just doubles your character usage.
And then he attaches a photo to the tweet, and the photo is like half of that big screen that's like on Stadium there, like between Chrysler and the big house.
Board?
Yeah, just like that big jumbotron that's there on the street.
Board.
And it's this photo, it just says play, and it's got a hockey stick and a puck on it. And like, it's very clearly just like he took this photo, like from his car.
As
and
he's
it's like
driving by.
Yeah, it's like half of the jumbotron, and like part of it's blurry because you're taking a photo of a digital screen. And he just attaches that to his tweet. And that's the
great.
Tweet.
I'm guessing he probably had a pretty good day. He's like, I just want to thank everyone. This is amazing. I don't remember the last time I had this much talent on the ice. I'm so happy. So that was Saturday night. And, you know, the Sunday game was, I was on the MGO podcast for like a short period of time talking about hockey, and you know, everybody was really excited, and I was excited too. I was just like, it's almost like when you wake up from like a really good dream and you're like, okay, wait a minute. Now, I know that was probably just a dream, but like, what am I really in a good mood like this, or did this just kind of happen in my mind? And like, you thought, okay, I don't think that was a one-off what happened. But you also watch what just happened in football, and you've been a Michigan hockey fan for I don't know how many years you need to be, 10 more. And it's like, can they do this again? Like, they have to be able to do this again because, like, they're good enough. But emotionally, you're like, no. There's no way that can happen again. But statistically, even though the game, they did end up winning 3-0, statistically, it was probably even skewed even more in Michigan's favor.
Yeah.
Like, just from Corsi and from even the eye test of just controlling the puck, and ASU, I don't even know if they got a good chance.
I'm not sure if they did either. I mean, walking in, it was very much like, okay, tonight we're going to see if this is a thing. Like, is this something to expect? And then like 3 minutes in, you're like, yep, this is a thing.
This is a thing.
Like,
well, they scored like 2 minutes into this one.
Kent Johnson gets the goal very, very quickly in. I think two minutes, 30 seconds into this period.
Yeah, and then they get another one later on in the first period.
There's 5 seconds left in the first period.
Yeah, after it seemed like they had the puck in the zone for the better part of 2 minutes.
Yeah, that was one of their longer periods of just extended dominant puck possession, and that's something that happened a few times in that there were multiple possessions in both games where Michigan would do a full line change while they still had the puck in the offensive zone. You know, it'd be like one guy in the corner out muscling four Ice Devils. Meanwhile, everyone else goes off and changes, and then four new guys come on, and the puck still stays in the zone. And
that was, because it was Beniers, who I would say was maybe the best player on the ice on Sunday, I would guess. Like, it was his line with Johnson, and I think they were with Becker.
Yeah.
And so they hold the puck in and create a couple opportunities. They're skating the puck around, hit some defensemen. One of the defensemen leaves and comes back, and then one of the forwards leaves and comes back. And meanwhile, Beniers is still skating around. And then so somebody else leaves, and Ciccolini comes in and kind of skates in, and Beniers finds him cutting to the net, like you said, with about 5 seconds left, and he's open because, I mean, no one's picking up a guy off the bench, and he just shoots and scores. And that was... And that was the point where I was like, I mean, we knew Michigan was going to win, but I was like, all right, it's going to take something to beat them tonight, because ASU can't even get the puck for the last 2 minutes of a period.
Well, that's another example of what I talked about earlier with movement, in that, you know, Ciccolini comes on the ice, Beniers has got it, he's looking for an open lane, and the Arizona State players are just kind of standing around trying to just cut off passing angles, and they leave this sliver of ice pretty wide open with an angle to the net. And what does Ciccolini do? He finds the open ice. He's there. He gets the pass, and it's in. I mean, that is what you do. That's finding open ice, getting to it, creating opportunities. I mean, it's a lot like basketball. You know, they always say, don't stand around. You know, find a spot, get your own shot, be ready to get the pass. And that's what Ciccolini did. He got the pass, and he and he converted.
Well, it's like they have multiple Steve Nashes, because the best like description I've ever heard of Steve Nash in a basketball game was, you just better be where you're supposed to be and cut, and you better be ready for a pass every time, because yeah. Steve will find a way to get you the ball. And that's based, and that's like what you were talking about is, I mean, I don't, they had a number of goals this weekend where guys just skated to open space, like you said, and the puck was there, because they all know, they've probably been well coached, but they all just know, okay, when you see this happen, you hit that window with a pass and the guy's got to be ready. And I mean, I can think of at least three or four goals of, and that's when they had 11. So that's like a third of their goals just came from that, which is, it's a lot of fun to watch. So the second period was different. Michigan did control it, I would say. Arizona State, I think, had like three shots or something like that. They didn't have a lot, but it was a little rougher, should we say. It was sort of like playing, what, a couple of years ago, Ohio State?
I mean, it's always like that against Ohio State.
Yeah.
But yeah, Michigan, I mean, this game definitely gets chippy at different points. Johnny Beecher gets clocked. Was that in the second period?
No, that was early on. We didn't talk about that. Yeah, Beecher got, I don't think it was a bad hit.
He got Cronwald. I mean, that's what it was. It was a tough hit that they call for charging, which is a thing that only happens in college nowadays. I can't tell you the last time I saw charging in an NHL game.
Okay.
But, you know, Beecher had just gotten rid of the puck. There's maybe a second or two in between he gets hit. Yeah, there was some contact to the head, but it was just a really hard hit. Like, you know, they gave him a 2-minute minor.
Beecher had his head down, right?
Yeah.
I think he did.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like targeting, where it's like if you lean into it and like set yourself up, like you're kind of also playing a part in this.
I mean, I thought they probably did the right thing. I mean, maybe they were even a little too harsh. I mean, it didn't seem like a malicious hit. It's just that's a sport. Like, you got to keep your head up. You're going to get, you know, clocked.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the story there. But, you know, James Sanchez ends up being the one leading some of the chippiness for ASU in the second and third periods. And we see a lot more penalties called, and Michigan gets some power play chances that they don't convert on, but not for the lack of trying.
How surprised were you that it was James Sanchez starting all of that?
I mean, a little bit, but something I was thinking about during the weekend was that there are very few players left on Michigan's roster who even remember James Sanchez at Michigan. It's Becker, huh, Pasichov, and Raby. And Morgan was on the team, but he wasn't able to play that year. That was his transfer year. But otherwise, like everybody else, you have this really, that's, I mean, part of that is a reason for optimism for next year. So there's very few seniors on the roster. And so,
yeah,
like that whole class of Blankenberg, Van Wy, they all came in the next year. So like, anybody that remembers Sanchez, anybody that was on that Frozen Four team, there's only a few left at this point. There were a lot left last year, but not this year. So, you know, Sanchez remembers Mel, but, I mean, he wasn't brutalizing Mel. So
but Sanchez, well, okay, that's a fair point. But Sanchez also remembers being at Michigan. And
yeah,
when you leave for whatever reason, I'm sure there were valid reasons.
It's probably playing time.
Yeah, then, you know, you want to come back and show people what you can do. And he had a really good year last year.
It's the Jack LaFontaine thing, right? Like,
right,
you want to show out well, and now, you know, evidently this performance maybe makes it seem like you made the wrong decision to leave, you know? You don't.
Well,
the regret sets in when you watch your team get ran out of the building like that. So, I don't know, but it was definitely, you know, he's a senior, he's a leader on that team.
With Johnny Walker.
Somebody's got to mix it up and light some fire, you know? I mean, they're going to have to go and play MSU this coming week. I mean, they need to be ready for the next series. So if that's what it took, then so be it.
So Michigan, I thought, got caught up in it a little bit, but then steadied themselves, and by the end of the period had another one of those stretches, as you talked about earlier, where they pretty much controlled play, but controlled play in their offensive end. And ASU couldn't really touch the puck. They didn't get an end-of-period goal like they'd had previously, but they kind of got back to saying, all right, that was fun, but now we're going to go back to just controlling this hockey game. And it was still only 2-0, which, like, geez, you know, the last year or two, it would have been like, 2-0 lead, that would be great. But it's like now you're almost expecting a little bit more, and you're thinking, okay, we'll get a third because if something just goes wrong and man slips and falls, you know, now it's 2-1, and you're like, okay, now the last thing we need to be doing is like overly dominating a game and give it away like this. And then in the third, that comes on what else? The power play. They finally broke through.
Well, their earlier power play, especially the extended 5-on-3, was just like nonstop chances, just shot after shot.
Right.
And ASU goes to Cole Brady, who they had inserted in the third period of their game on Saturday. They go to him as the starter on Sunday. And, I mean, he's the reason that was not 7-0 or 8-0. I mean, he just was magnificent during that 5-on-3 situation where he's just, I mean, the glove was great, really active, getting a piece of everything. And he's a guy that was drafted in this past draft, and you could kind of see why. Really impressive performance from him, and he kept ASU in the game. But even with that 2-0 lead, you know, it was just like ASU's not going to win this game. Like, they're just totally outmatched. And then once, you know, Brisson finds Lambert streaking into the zone, and then Lambert wires the shot by Brady to go up 3-0, it's like, yeah, this game's over.
Yeah.
We knew it already, but...
No, that was sort of the exhale, where it was just like, okay, 2-goal leads, you know, go either way. 3-goal leads, when you have Strauss-Mann, you're pretty much like, all right, that's pretty much put to bed.
And Lambert, I mean, this weekend, he just looked faster than he has been in the past. I don't know if he was, you know, probably hitting the weight room, or they got him, you know, I don't know, on a good diet, but he definitely looks just a lot more athletic than he had been in the past. And, you know, his speed looked very much in place with some of the guys that have a lot more talent than he does, which was pretty surprising to see. And, you know, that shot that we talked about was back there, and a really nice wrist shot to score that goal, but a great pass from Brisson or Brisson, because they gave us both pronunciations, and I don't know which one it is.
It looks like Brisson, but I...
Well, we had said Brisson. Then on the pronunciation guide, it was B-R-E-E-S-O-N. So I pronounced it Brisson on the broadcasts, but then the PA was like Brisson. So I don't know.
Maybe he's one of those people that says, I don't really care. Say what you will.
If you're related to him, please write to us.
Somebody tweeted us. These are the tweets for Alex this week. Give us your takes on Brisson's last name. So, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought up the Lambert thing, because I think that we really focused a lot on the incoming freshman and the high talent that was coming in. There were three or four guys I thought that looked pretty freaking good from last year's team that did not look this good in the past. And you mentioned Lambert, and I noticed that from basically the first shift on Saturday. It was like, yeah. Whoa, who's this guy? And then we talked about Person on the back end, played pretty well. Jack Summers only played on the Saturday game. Sunday game, he was scratched, and they played Jake Kiernan, who had a nervy first shift or so, and then basically looked pretty good the rest of the time. And then the other guy that I actually thought was okay was Mike Pastajov, but he played only on Saturday, too.
Him and Granowitz got swapped out for LaPointe and Ciccolini,
who
right.
has scored tied his... Yeah. Total or his career total in goals with one in the second game. And I think that he's a guy that you theorize could have been put up to the top line, but he's a guy that if you pair him with, I think, with guys like Beniers and Kent Johnson, I think he'll get some goals just because he'll be on the ice and in good spaces.
Well, and I mean, this week we're just talking about how to evaluate the season moving forward in terms of the lines. I mean, I would expect Lambert and Becker to be mainstays, and then I think what we saw this weekend with those four sort of rotating, I think that's something to expect moving forward, that Granowitz and Pastajov, they'll, you know, circle in, Ciccolini will mix in. I didn't see a ton from LaPointe in that first game.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Which, by the way, also apparently the pronunciation guide says it's just Philip LaPointe, not Philippe. Traitor to his Quebecois heritage, but anyway... He seemed fine. I mean, hopefully we'll see more from him moving on. But the point is, we should expect to see... we should expect to see some of these guys rotating, and Mel will try to keep them all fresh and give them all chances when all of them probably could be everyday players in a lot of teams. So
that's an interesting point, too. And I just kind of wonder if that's what led to all of the back-checking and hustle on defenses. I know there's practice and everything, but, I mean, in the past, there weren't a lot of other places that you could go as a coach to say, I'm going to play X or I'm going to play Y. Now, there are probably more forwards that you could play than spots you have available.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you're not back checking and you're not like holding your defensive assignments and skating all out or whatever, like you could find yourself scratched.
Yeah. And we should note on those power plays, I mean, a mainstay of that we haven't really talked about is, I mean, Breeson. I don't know.
I think I'm in
whatever
for
his name is. His shot looked really good on the power play. They queued him up in the right circle, and I mean, he's got a really good shot. And you tee him up, a lot of those are going to go in. They didn't on Sunday. Brady made a lot of great saves, but that's a weapon. And Triscott's not going to play on the power play, but we saw a couple of his shots,
yes,
slap shots from the point that, you know, made some like loud sounds off the end boards in, yes, Yost. So there's some shooters on this team too.
Yep, at the back end for sure. I mean, three defensemen have goals, I think, on Saturday?
Yeah, and we should talk just for a moment about Owen Power just in general.
just aside from everything else.
Because, you know, it's so many people talking about him, and I mean, I think he cleared all of the hurdles. He looked really good, and he moves so well for his size.
He does.
He can move up on the play, and then getting back, he's no problem in his own zone. He looked very confident, steady, making smart plays. Again, wasn't tested a ton because there just weren't many chances, but I saw everything I wanted to see out of him, and the scouts that were allowed in, I tweeted this, but I saw Chris Draper, Red Wings director of scouting. He was there. There was other scouts there. I mean, the ones that attended this weekend, I think, had to have liked what they saw from him.
Well, his reach is just crazy, too. I mean, you talk about how well he moves, and that's kind of something in and of itself, but he's also, I mean, he's 6'5", so his wingspan is going to be insane, especially when you put a stick in his hands, and he can play defense from a long ways away, just, and then not to mention, you know, he's big, and he can move guys off with his body, so, and he looked to have good control, and you were saying, he'd get deep in the zone and get back,
yeah,
and he just, there's not much that I'm going to sit there and nitpick about him.
No, and I mean, that's why NHL teams want him. I mean,
yeah,
they've watched Chris Pronger, they watched Victor Hedman. You put guys at that size that are good on the blue line, and, you know, a rush comes in, they've got that stick with, you know, just gigantic arm length, and, you know, you're done, right? I mean,
yeah,
your rush is over. They can knock you off physically and take you out with the body, or they can use the stick and whack at you from 15 feet away, and then that's it. So that's why they like him, and he is definitely NCAA caliber. That's my conclusion from this weekend. We didn't know how he would translate from the USHL, but he's not going to have any problems playing. That was my sense of his situation.
I agree with your sense and the situation.
You should plug the Corsi numbers from this game because they were very fun.
So Saturday was like, I think it was 65-25. So we don't have shot charts, so I can't do my own. I'm going to work on that. I got to talk to a couple people, but we got zero shot charts. So I just looked at what College Hockey News had, and they had, I think, 65-25 for the Sunday game, which is, I mean, that's insane. That's like 70-some percent, 72 or 73%.
And for those unfamiliar, Corsi is a rough estimate of possession, how often one team is keeping the puck.
Right.
So
it's just attempts on net. So yeah, what it is it's not shots, because shots, you can have a great shot and it misses the net by 2 inches and it doesn't count because,
yeah,
it hits nothing. So it's just how many times are you taking a shot at the net versus your opponent taking a shot at the net. And it kind of is like you said, like how often do you have the puck if you're going to put it on,
yeah,
you know, a continuum.
So Michigan is controlling the puck roughly 70-75% of the time in the Sunday game.
And that's taking out special teams. Sorry, we didn't touch that.
It takes out special teams.
So when everything is equal and you're just playing 5-on-5 hockey, this is what you have.
And Michigan's possession time is almost exclusively in the offensive zone. Arizona, yeah, State's possession time is trying to exit the zone and then turning it over, or trying to get into the neutral zone and then running into a wall at the blue line. Like,
yeah,
the possession, even when they had the puck, the possessions looked different.
And Saturday's was 49-26, which is more or less the same. It's not quite two-thirds. So Michigan, like, when we're saying that Michigan had the puck all weekend, they literally pretty much had the puck all weekend. This was, I mean, I've never seen back-to-back games like this. I've seen where they've blown somebody out and had a good game and then followed it up with more of a 50-50 game. Neither of these games were really close to 50-50. So is Arizona State bad?
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, you look at their last year, and because this is the first comment Brian got on his article that he posted today was, you know, we remember beating Minnesota, you know, whatever, how many weeks ago, and now, you know, first impressions can deceive you, blah, blah, blah. But, like, when you looked at Michigan and Minnesota's football, like, you know, they were a team that lost the whole defense and had lots of the offensive line in out with COVID. And, like, there was a lot of reasons to be skeptical of Minnesota. I mean, several members of the MGO team were very publicly. But with ASU, like, it's not as, I mean, not as clear. I mean, they were 4-3-1 against the top 20 in pairwise last year, 6-7-1 against 21 through 40. So overall, they were about 500 against top 40 teams. But then among the bottom 20, 41-60, they were 12-1-1. So they were very clearly somewhere between mediocre and good last year. Yeah. And they returned two of their four highest scorers, including their Hobie candidate and Johnny Walker. They get a goalie back. They added a goalie who's a college draft pick. They added another guy who's a college draft pick. College Hockey News loved their recruiting class. They've had the same coach since they got into college hockey. They made the tournament 2 years ago. They were going to make it last year. I mean, there's just no reason to think this is a bad team. There's no reason. None. And so even if they're just firmly mediocre, I mean, last year they got beaten by Wisconsin. They split with MSU. So even if you say they're a bottom-end Big Ten team, how many times did a bottom-end Big Ten team just get annihilated, you know, last year? How many? I mean, Wisconsin was not very good, but when did they lose 11-1 in two games combined, controlling the puck 30% of the time? I mean, those kinds of beatdowns just don't happen in college hockey. You compare Minnesota State or North Dakota last year against the number 60 team, you know, Mercyhurst or whoever, and you're not going to get many games like these two games. Like, this just doesn't happen in college hockey. Hockey's not a sport where you see this kind of beatdown all the time. And it's just... So, that's how you end up with the coach saying this is the best college hockey team he's ever seen. Like, that's how it happens.
So the Ice Devils will travel up to East Lansing, like you said previously, and they'll play against Michigan State while Michigan is playing in Madison. So that'll be interesting because, you know, we're talking about can Arizona State, like, be good enough to play in the Big Ten? Would you want them in the Big Ten? Should there be eight schools? All that stuff. Well, Michigan State is probably going to be the worst team in the Big Ten, I think, maybe. Somewhere down there as like the bottom two or three. So we'll see what they do there. I mean, if they play on par with them, now you're sitting there and looking like, okay, this is a team that Michigan State has risen in the last couple of years from like abjectly terrible in the bottom 10 to about 50-50, around 30th, 25th, somewhere in that range. And if they can play with them, now you're looking at, okay, that's just shows you where Michigan's at versus where a team that's probably going to be in the middle of the pack is.
Yeah, I mean, if ASU is losing 10-0 to MSU, that's a warning sign.
Yeah, like when
Minnesota
Maryland
gave up 700 yards to Maryland. Yeah, but also Michigan will be playing Wisconsin at that same time, and that will be a pretty good barometer as well. So
that's why we have plural televisions set up here. But
yeah, there you go. But I mean, I think overall, just as a general thought of this weekend exiting it, last week when we were projecting the team, it was like, okay, you know, Michigan's got four or five blue chip offensive guys coming in. You know, if you have four or five bullets in the chamber, your chance that you get at least one Kyle Connor is pretty good.
Yep.
This looked like what happens if all four are Kyle Connor.
Yeah, four Kyle Connors.
That's what this weekend looked like. Not saying that it's going to happen, but if you imagine four Kyle Connors playing it together, this is what it would look like. This is what you would get. Michigan's one of the most talented teams, if not the most talented team in college hockey history. They played like it this weekend. And if they keep playing like it, there's not going to be many teams who can beat them.
The next team that has a chance to, as we segue into the last part of our segment two, is Wisconsin. If there's a team that has probably underperformed to expectations in the past couple of years, it might be the Badgers. They have not quite the classes that Michigan has had the last 2 years, but they were...
They've had some that are close.
In the same ballpark, yeah. Except that they just didn't play any defense, played even worse goaltending, and I mean, I'm not sure what to think of their coaching.
Yeah, I don't think it's very good, but they beat Notre Dame... This weekend, they swept the Irish in South Bend. They got outshot in both games, but the shot charts were pretty even, so they were probably pretty similar games. I mean, I watched some of the Friday game. It looked like a pretty even game. Wisconsin was a little better. I thought their defensive discipline looked better. They got a new goalie, who we talked about last week.
Badoon.
He had a pretty nice couple games. Looks to be a solid player. The thing with Wisconsin, though, is that their talent level is going to be higher than ASU.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be what it was last year because Keandre Miller's gone, Turcotte's gone, and now Dylan Holloway, who scored two goals this weekend, is exiting to play in the Team Canada World Junior Championship tournament or
camp, whatever. I don't know. It's like 6 weeks.
6 weeks up in Red Deer, Alberta. We talked about it last week. That's the camp that Mel Pearson stopped Owen Power from going to. So,
and you can see why.
If you're keeping score, Mel 1, Tony Granato 0. But so Dylan Holloway's gone, which means in terms of high-end pro talent, it's really just Cole Caulfield, who's a fine player. He got rocked on Friday night on a hit by Colin Tyson, but he looks okay. He's a good goal scorer. I'm curious to see how he'll do without any real playmakers next to him now with Holloway gone. But overall, there's still a lot of talent on this roster. There's some guys that can skate. So it'll be interesting to see how Michigan matches up against a little bit more of an athletic team.
Yeah, and you mentioned this earlier, but they shut out Notre Dame, which means they didn't give up any goals, which is a good thing based on what they had done last year. And from I also watched that game, and I did not see them really have any terrible defensive zone turnovers,
no,
which they were very prone to. Michigan would hem them in from time to time last year, especially the games at Yost, and just turn them over and get goal after goal. And I remember thinking, I don't think this Michigan team is a great offensive team, but Wisconsin sure just found a way to make Michigan look like it. And
yeah,
they did not really seem to do that in either game, specifically more the Friday game, but either game this weekend. So it looks like they probably cleaned up some of those issues, but they also look like they maybe lost a couple of guys on the attacking side that might bring it back to even again.
Yeah, Wisconsin, I mean, they looked solid. They beat Notre Dame, but yeah, losing Holloway is going to be tough for them, and it's just a matter of a second team, you know, that Michigan's going to face,
yeah,
right? Another opponent, and if Michigan comes out and does what they did to Arizona State and they do that to Wisconsin, then it's like, okay, you know, here we go. Like, this might be just a juggernaut. And if the games are more even, then you're like, oh, maybe Arizona State was just bad. I mean, you know, this will be an interesting test. I mean, Michigan rocketed up to sixth in the rankings this week. They've got a lot to prove, and we'll see what happens. The games are on FS Detroit if you live in this area. They're on BTN Plus if you don't. And I believe that means BTN Plus will be streaming the FS Wisconsin stream, so it should be a professional stream.
That's what they've done in the past, I believe.
Yeah, there are a lot of angry people about BTN Plus this weekend. We were not watching BTN Plus because we were at the game, but
in our suites.
Our understanding is that the broadcast quality was quite poor. Sorry about that. unfortunate to hear that, but you know, BTN Plus should be a better product. This is kind of one of Brian's favorite things to talk about.
Yeah.
It wouldn't take much for the conference to make it better. It wouldn't take much for Michigan to make it better.
No.
But it is what it is, but at least this weekend we'll be spared.
But at the worst, I mean, you can watch this Michigan hockey team play. I feel like that is probably in the end going to be a better investment than it's been in the past few years. So it might be well worth your while.
Should be a fun weekend. Thank you for listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 3.2. I'm Alex Strain with David Nasternak. Come back next week where hopefully we'll be asking the question, is Wisconsin actually bad?